Hello and welcome to the Health Innovation East Midlands podcast. I'm Kay Khan, Head of Programme Delivery for Patient Safety and Improvement, and today we're diving into a topic that sits at the heart of the NHS transformation, risk. How we understand it, how we share it, and how we can reimagine it across our systems. We'll be exploring insights from the Reimagining Risk Report led by the Midlands Clinical Senate, and we'll look at what this means for innovation, for patient care, and for the way organisations like Heme can support systems to think differently. Before we start, let's introduce you to our speakers today. Can you please introduce yourselves, the work of the Clinical Senate, and say a little bit about how you were involved in this report? Do you want to go first, Will?
So I'm Will Taylor. I'm one of the vice chairs of the Midlands Clinical Senate and also the chief medical officer for Hereford, Munster and Coventry and Warwickshire ICB. I've been really interested in how we manage risk for some time and how we manage risks as systems. This Clinical Senate really do think a lot about this sort of thing and how we can create a space that is optimal for the patient in this. So we did this with Alan Reid, who's consultant public health, and other Clinical Senate members to kind of design a piece of work with our fellows to really look in depth at how we could better manage patient risks and put patients at the centre of that.
Hi, I'm Sophie Reid-Willits. I'm a designated nurse for Safeguarding Children, and I was one of the fellows involved in the project. With regards to the project, I was involved with aspects of the literature search, facilitating some of the focus groups, the data analysis and the write-up.
And my name is Luke Brown. I'm a clinical psychologist and I work in the NHS. And I also work academically at the University of Birmingham in the School of Psychology. And I was a fellow involved in this work, and similar to Sophie, involved in the literature search, design, methodology, as well as conducting focus groups and doing the analysis and write-up.
I also just wanted to mention the two other fellows that couldn't be here today, Angela and Frankie. They were both instrumental throughout the project. I just wanted to mention a little bit around the Clinical Leadership Fellow Programme. So as fellows, we had the opportunity to work with senior leaders across the Midlands footprint as part of various projects. We also supported reviews and there were training opportunities as well. The project work really enabled us to enhance our skills with regards to leadership, strategy, project management, quality assurance and health and research policy. And it allowed us to not only network with members of the wider Senate Council, but also with each other as fellows. We were all from different professional backgrounds and specialities, so we all brought a different perspective and expertise to the project.
Thank you all for joining us today. So, first question for you all. Before we discuss the findings, can I ask why you chose to focus on this area and the methods that you use to explore?
I think we've had a recognition for some time that, you know, and this is where the whole integrated care piece has come from, is that the way we manage in healthcare systems has become more fragmented. And we are also in healthcare systems which are becoming more and more under pressure, especially under things like the winter months. And clinicians are having to make risk-based decisions based on the patients in front of them, but also taking into account the wider system pressures, what's happening in their hospitals, in their communities, and against the background of increased litigation, increased complaints, and you know, perhaps a bit of fear. We just wanted to think about how could we hold risk as healthcare systems? How could we support professionals to hold risk and to do that? And we really wanted to do that across maybe an urgent emergency care system, which made more sense, using an appreciative inquiry approach and really deep dive into what was influencing both clinician and patient decision making. And the clinical fellows took this and really ran with it. And I'll hand over to them to talk a little bit more.
So just going on from what Will has said, the primary methodology that we did use to guide the study was appreciative inquiry. And that's very much designed to help participants identify existing strengths and opportunities within their organisations. And it can really promote positive changes for systems as well. So, as you know, Will alluded to, the area of risk is politically driven, and using the urgent and emergency pathway with its known pressures, by combining a methodology then like appreciative inquiry inquiry with a patient scenario, it really did allow us to capture participants' real-life accounts of how risk is managed and how systems might improve its approach to risk management in the future.
So our approach was a qualitative one, in which we used interviews and focus groups with clinicians using real-world scenarios. And we also approached service managers and healthcare leaders across the system within an integrated ICS in the Midlands. And we then analysed these qualitative focus groups interviews using thematic analysis, and then analysed them for emerging themes.
Thank you all. So there were six themes identified in the report. Can you please talk us through the results and the findings, please?
So the participants of the focus groups really provided insight into how risk is managed across various roles. The first theme that we did draw out was around there being a patient-centred approach, which was found to be vital with regards to risk management. This encompassed patient characteristics, including complexity, comorbidities, also the consequences of medical treatment, and patients' own tolerance and responsibility in relation to risk as well. So an example would be, you know, some patients would be happy if they could be treated at home with the caveat of admission if they were to deteriorate. However, we know that this wouldn't be the case for all patients. The second theme was around individual clinician variation. So with that, we mean how confident clinicians may feel, what their experience is, what their perception and responsibility are in relation to risk. And again, you know, an example would be a senior experienced clinician would often feel greater comfort with regards to handling risk. The third team was working within a clinical team, and it will come as no surprise, but collaborative working, communication was seen as key to risk management. And if teams were effective at this, if they had professional trust with one another, if there was reduced workload, then obviously the risk would therefore reduce. The fourth theme was noted to be the difference between clinical teams. Included in this were things like handover, again, collaborative working, and also the shared understanding of risk that exists between different teams. At the time that we were undertaking the review, there was also the development of PSIRF, the Patient Safety Incident Response Framework, and that really supports the need for that shared risk and that oversight with regards to the management of risk as well. The clinical management was seen as the fifth theme, with senior clinicians feeling like they had greater awareness of risks and understanding around system pressures. And I know Will alluded to this earlier, but around how, you know, pressures like winter pressures, certain targets for organisations as well can impact that risk management. Finally, system level. So within this theme came the importance of shared responsibility, autonomy, accountability. Something that came through was making sure that risk isn't seen as a governance exercise, allowing organisations to mitigate with autonomy, and obviously national guidance and direction and how that can influence risk management across systems as well.
Thank you, Sophie.
So the second part of the focus group interviews was focused around the appreciated inquiry methodology that Will spoke about at the very beginning. And in this part, we asked participants to really imagine what a good system would look like where risk is shared and managed effectively. So we asked the focus group three questions. What practices are currently effective? What is the ideal scenario in a perfect system? So kind of that kind of blue sky thinking, you know, what would you like to exist? What could exist that would be useful? And the final question was around the steps necessary to achieve the ideal state. So the response to the first question identified three themes. The first theme was around, enhanced clinical resources, in which kind of finances and staffing infrastructure was seen as a really important part of managing risk within the system. Participants also spoke about clinical services, managing risk, and wider organisational processes. So really thinking about how clinical services and the organisational system manages risk kind of collectively, really. And then the third area was kind of like effective practices in managing risk within the system. and specific work areas, so thinking more locally about where kind of risk is managed within the team. So in response to the second question, what is the ideal scenario for a perfect system? Participants envisaged this idea of like an ideal risk management framework for the system, in which was kind of three components or themes. So that was, I guess the first theme was kind of a resource-centric strategies. So thinking about what resources systems need and services need to be able to deliver this idealized kind of vision. Participants also spoke about broader systemic strategies, and that was thinking more broadly around the organization systems and infrastructure, and how those things could be used in a more strategic way to kind of address kind of patient risk management on the ground. And then the third area and the final area was around service-centric strategies. So this was really thinking more about what could, I guess, teams do at a strategic level. And the integration between these three levels was seen as like this perfect strategy for managing risk across the system. The final question as part of the appreciative inquiry component of the focus group was around the next steps, really. So what steps would we need to be able to achieve the framework that I just mentioned? And participants spoke about lots of different areas, really, that I'll kind of go over really briefly. So participants talk about, you know, practical steps to ensuring resources were obtained. And participants talked about behaviours that services could begin to embody that might enable them to think about the kind of service level strategies. Despite the identified strategies, there was a consensus that risk cannot be entirely eradicated, and that all systems would have to really acknowledge that there would be a presence of risk within the system. And leading on to that, there was a kind of concerns or kind of questions around legislative change, about how do systems develop processes or strategies in a more kind of policy arena that might help acknowledge this risk and move towards these risk strategies being addressed.
So I just to sum up as well a little bit, what really got me out of this work was we really think hard a lot about healthcare organisation, about risk-free pathways, around governance. And we talk a lot about patient-centered decision-making and how that works and how we should give patients the information to make their own decision within their autonomy. What I think has been missing from this conversation, and what there's possibly, I think, the most powerful thing that came out of this was there's another person involved in that decision-making, which is the individual clinician in front of that patient. And what really came out of this strongly for me was those factors that we often aren't addressing that influence the decision-making of the clinician talking to the patient. And the real power of this is then thinking about what we can do to change that alongside the system level organization and the patient-centered decision-making. But yeah, it was a brilliant piece of work by these guys.
Yeah, no, I agree, Will. It was great to read the report. And I think you're right, and Luke, you've just touched on it, that there is always going to be that acknowledgement that risk is a constant in healthcare. But I think the report shows something really important, that while systems talk about that shared risk, and Will, you've just touched on this, clinicians often feel that that burden sits squarely with them. And this is a question for all of you. In your view, why does risk feel so different depending on where you sit in the system, and how does this affect frontline decision making?
The variation in practice for the individual clinicians was a key discussion point during the focus groups, and all the frontline clinicians that we did speak to felt the responsibility of risk. They felt that it definitely sat with them more than the system. I think clinicians are aware of organisational risks. I don't think that they're necessarily aware of all the risks, but they are aware, you know, of some of them, but they're not necessarily considering that when they're making decisions around individual patients. I think from their perspective, ultimately the focus is on patient safety and making the safest decision for the patient in front of them at that time.
So I would come in again a little bit. So I think The difficulty here is we then try and make the safer decision as clinicians. And I think this happens across the system, whether you're in the community, whether you're in hospital, in the front door, whether you're making a discharge decision, you will make a decision about the patient in front of you. But sometimes, and I'm not saying this always happens, but sometimes some clinicians are starting to make decisions that are best for them, not necessarily for the patient. And I think that's where we start thinking about things. So there may be a decision to admit a patient. Now, the riskier place might be to keep that patient home, and hospital is perceived to be the safer option for the clinician. But actually, is it in the patient's best interests? And sometimes it's trying to make that balance. And that is where it gets hard, because you do something that protects yourself as a clinician and might be on the surface safer for the patient. But actually, in the long term, once you've admitted that patient, you risk, you know, disablement from being in hospital. But also, every unnecessary admission puts four other people at risk, you know, the person in A&E waiting to get into the hospital, the ambulance sitting outside the front door waiting to get a patient into the A&E, and the patients in the community waiting for the ambulance. So it's really thinking about, A, I'm going to do something. Is it in the patient's best interests? Or is it just because actually I'm doing something that's risk-free for me? And B, am I thinking wider about what's happening around the rest of the healthcare system? And if we start implementing some of the things that have been talked about in this report, we should be able to improve that decision making, which is really, really key for both clinicians and patients.
Thank you, Will. Out of the six themes identified, so that was the patient centeredness, individual variation, team dynamics, inter-team risk, management perspectives, and system level gaps, was there a theme that generated the most disagreement or emotion in the groups?
So I was involved with the two of the three focus groups, and I think for me one of the most emotive elements was the individual clinician variation and the responsibility around patient risk when you are frontline. And I know that, you know, we have discussed that. There was also discussion around some of the concern from professionals around the impact, a possible impact on professional registration, if there were any adverse effects from taking risks as well. I think for me a real positive outcome of the focus groups was that it generated an opportunity to discuss and consider risk from different agency and clinical perspective as well, and there was real value in this. Something that we did note, you know, when we undertook the report and we did the write-up, was that it was a small sample size, and I think there would be real value in undertaking further research to explore this area further as well.
I guess one overarching theme that really stood out for me was how the clinicians' perception of the wider system shaped their risk management decisions. These decisions were rarely based solely on the risk posed by the patient in front of them, but instead was deeply influenced by how clinicians viewed other services across the pathway, the level of control they felt they had of the system as a whole, and their perceived trust in other professionals or teams to do their bit and chip in really in the management of risk. And I guess from a psychological perspective, I found this really interesting. I think traditionally risk is kind of, and risk assessment is seen as being about what's happening in the here and now. Whereas what I observed in the focus groups, which more something more systemic and dynamic, where clinicians were constantly making judgments about risk based on their relationship to other organisational factors, including uncertainty about how others might respond, anxieties about gaps in the pathway. And this became especially clear in several practical examples. For instance, the dynamic between a geriatric consultant and a community discharge service, where they were talking about the relationship that that existed between these two services that really helped decide about how much risk could be taken in relation to this one case.
So the report describes handover as fraught with risk. What were some of the stories or insights that really brought this to light?
The discussion was predominantly around the transfer of care from primary to secondary services, and if there is poor information transfer, this can increase risk to patients through errors and failure to follow up. There was also discussion around the impact of repetitive work. So multiple triages for pre-hospital services was identified as a real source of frustration for staff. You can also see that from a patient perspective as well. So the patient having to tell their history, their story to multiple professionals. There was a lot of recognition around the number of agencies involved. So based on the scenario that we presented in the focus groups, there was the GP, ambulance, emergency department, the medical team in the hospital and the community. So that's five teams. And actually that was felt to be a risk in itself. You know, when you're considering things like the handover between the teams, the knowledge of what's available at point of discharge, that isn't always known or available. And that doesn't even consider the handover then that needs to take place internally within those teams as well. I think on a positive note, there were discussions with the Ambulance Trust. They highlighted within the system where the study took place that one of the areas within that footprint have actually got the best handover times across the region. And it was felt that one of the reasons for this was the proactive senior leadership team. And if there were delays, then it was seen very much as a trust and a system-wide issue. The ICB also reported that peer reviews had taken place to share best practice across other trusts as well.
Thank you. So one of the clearest messages from your analysis is the gap between how system leaders believe risk is shared and how frontline clinicians actually experience risk. That disconnect has real consequences for behaviour and system flow. How would you describe that disconnect in simple terms?
So I sit in both camps because I'm a sort of senior clinical leader in the system now and also still a practicing GP. I think the thing is, clinicians do feel they hold risk, they hold us alone. And we've kind of generated a system over the last few years where we fragmented teams, you know, the old firm structure in hospitals or in GP practices. And I've got a really good story, actually. The other day I was in triage and I heard one of the younger doctors in the practice trying to admit a 96-year-old with a recurrent DVT in her arm against a family who clearly did not want this to happen. And I kind of just stopped her and said, you know, do you really want to admit this patient? She said, well, she could get a PE. I can't take that risk. I can't hold it in the community. And I said, let me, because they were getting, it was getting quite an agitated. So I had a chat to the family, really didn't want to go, and she didn't want to go into hospital. I managed to arrange everything in the community, but it took me an hour to do, whereas it took me 5 minutes to admit her, which is another issue here about how constructive this is. But it was about my ability to absorb risk, which a younger doctor couldn't do, and my support for that younger doctor. I think we have set up a system where we aren't always there for each other. And if you work in a cohesive team with really, really strong senior clinical support that's visible and there, that enables people to make those decisions better. And that varies by experience. It varies about your local team support. And we often work on this sort of pathway-driven conveyor belt care. So I was talking to a nursing home nurse the other day, and she said, when I see a patient, if they fall, I don't want to take that risk, you know, I call an ambulance. The ambulance comes, and often you get junior ambulance. So they go, my responsibility is to take this patient to hospital. They get to hospital. They see a junior doctor who goes, my responsibility is to do bloods and x-rays. By that point, it's 11 o'clock at night, that patient is then in the hospital. At no point in that journey is anyone asking why or being able to ask for senior support. So I think it's really important that we think about the culture that we now operate under, and actually, can we change that to improve the air cover for clinicians? That wraparound team where you're all supporting each other, really visible senior support, and confidence and understanding in the community pathways and the teams you hand off to in this, and really good IT systems where you can see what's happening across different organizations much, much better, is how we would then change that behavior and improve the flow, but also more importantly, improve things for patients.
Thank you for sharing that story, Will. I think as you've talked through that story, a couple of things resonated with me, and it's things that are out of your report. So in that clinical variation, I think the experience that you had compared to the younger GP, patient-centeredness, you know, listening to the patient and their family. But you also sort of touched on something important there around the constraints of time, that it would have taken 5 minutes to admit someone, whereas it took an hour. And I think that's probably another thing to touch on and highlight, that people often don't have the time within their working day to kind of continue to kind of champion things on a patient-centered, focused whole pathway, and it ends up being what's quick.
I think
that it kind of supporting them in terms of that risk as well, because I think it is that personal risk. What if they have a PE? Will I be criticised? And I think it's that personal registration and the kind of litigation and complaint aspect.
I really think this concept of integrated NAPA teams really comes into its own here, because we have created a system over the last few years where everything revolves around a hospital based. When people deteriorate, you go to hospital. We can change the healthcare system to better support clinicians if we put better systems in neighborhoods, in around people's homes, in the communities they live in, which is why that piece of work now is a priority.
Absolutely. Thank you. So another question for you. Did clinicians offer examples of where they felt risk was being handed down to them? And what would it take for clinicians to genuinely feel the system has their backs?
We have touched on it already, but I think it was felt by some of the participants that there did need to be that culture shift in terms of risk management. It was felt that there would be significant value in knowing the risks of other agencies within the system as well. It was acknowledged in some of the focus group discussions that different stakeholders may not consider the risks affecting other services and viewing risk as a system or a shared risk rather than in isolation to a particular agency would require a real change in mindset. On the other hand, some agencies did have a clearer understanding of risks that impact on services. And when this is the case, resources can be appropriately directed or redirected then to alternative provision. So an example that was shared was NHS 111 having access to data regarding pressures within the ambulance service. And they're then able to respond to ensure patients are directed effectively to resources and services then according to demand. One of the quotes that we pulled out in the report was around the value of knowing risks that sit outside your door.
So I think that concept of what the risks outside your door is really important. And actually, I talked about this earlier. We've developed this concept of the rule of four. So every unnecessary admission puts four people at risk: the inpatient, the patient in an ED, the patient waiting in the ambulance, and the patient waiting at home. And we need to make people aware of this. This is a really important part of the conversation. It's not just about the patient in front of you. What you're making decisions there actually puts other people at risk. But that then really means you have to understand out-of-hospital pathways. If you're in a hospital community, have confidence in that community capacity, that actually that is going to be as safe as a hospital admission, if not better, and trusted assessors and trusted sort of staff in the community. And that interaction between hospital and community then becomes really key. And cross-professional management of risk between AHPs, between doctors, nurses, social care, all respecting what each other does. The other thing that's really key in this is, you know, care planning with patients. Because if patients are able to tell people what they want in advance, and it's really well documented in forms like respect forms, that supports clinicians to support the patients. Well filled in respect forms are actually a key tool in this kind of place, because that then gives the clinicians seeing them confident that they know what that patient wants, what their things. We often don't fill in these forms with patients as well as we could do. You know, think people will often write, not for admission unless reversible. Well, actually, if you're an ambulance staff turning up, what does that actually mean?
Yeah.
So we could do better.
Yeah, I really love the rule of four. I think it really helps make you think of, like you say, those other people at risk of harm, the inpatient, the ED patient, the patient waiting in the ambulance, and the person at home. So I think that's a really good way of kind of reminding people that it's not just a person in front of you, and get you to really imagine thinking of it as a system. So yeah, that really resonated with me and will stick with me now. If you could redesign risk management for the future, what would it look like? And what's the one message you want our listeners to take away?
We were really able to explore this because of the appreciative inquiry approach that we used. And while it was acknowledged that, you know, more work did need to be done, it was really noted the benefits of a collaborative culture where risk is really seen as a shared responsibility. I know Luke has already talked about it, but it was identified as part of the review that if resources weren't a constraint, the top three system changes that were identified were around enhanced staffing, integrated digital tools and streamlined governance. Participants really did emphasise that these improvements would support a much more proactive and unified approach to risk management. I think the ideal model will encourage a shared system-wide approach to risk, and that would balance individual accountability and then collective ownership across all levels of the system as well. I think for me, the podcast has really come at a key time, given the current changes to the NHS that we're going through and the restructure. The NHS 10-year plan really gives a clear directive in terms of hospital to community. And I think it's a really key time to develop skills and capabilities within local systems in relation to risk management and the possibilities around how we can reimagine risk across systems.
Thank you, Sophie.
So rather than focusing solely on clinical aspects of risk assessment, I think we need to place much greater emphasis on training clinicians in the psychological processes that shape risk-related decisions. Factors such as fear of getting it wrong, anxieties about making mistakes, and clinicians' perceptions of other services and the degree of trust they have in those services play a significant role in how risk is judged and managed. These internal processes, although rarely acknowledged, can strongly influence decision-making. If services were to improve the quality and consistency of risk management, they need to recognise and address these psychological drivers, not just the procedural ones or clinical ones. Linked to this, organisations may also need to think more deliberately about how they connect different parts of the care pathway. Many of the psychological processes influencing clinical decision-making, such as unconscious biases, assumptions about other services, and internal pressures clinical teams feel, remain largely invisible within the system. If services could make these less conscious elements more visible, discussable, and open to reflection, they would be better placed to monitor and support the psychological side of risk management. This also means organisations taking some ownership of these dynamics, rather than leaving them entirely with the individual clinician. Strengthening inter-service communication, building trust across teams, and acknowledging systemic pressures could all help clinicians make more balanced and supportive decisions about risk. It surfaces strengths, supports positive dialogue, and builds shared understanding.
Thank you, Luke. Will?
So I think the key takeaway from me is one of culture here and how we change culture. So I, off the back of all this work the Clinical Fellows did, I actually back in November ran a large 50-person multidisciplinary workshop around this risk work. We did it around case presentations, which was interesting. We took a load of cases where we thought people had actually not been treated as well as they could be because of different perceptions of management of risk. And what happened, we didn't actually use any of them because all the people that came used their own case examples because everyone has them. But what really came out of that is that we need to build a culture where people feel confident, supported in the decisions they make, and that confident and supported to make the best decisions for patients. We're actually going to run a series of culture change OD pieces with a number of our teams across Hereford and Worcestershire over the next 6 months. So I'd be really interested to see if that culture change, and culture change is hard, does start resulting in changes and to how we look after our patients.
Yeah, no, great reminder there, Will, around the culture there. I think that's such a key aspect of any changes or supporting our patients and systems and people who deliver the care. And I think if we get the culture right, then the rest of it usually follows. So drawing on from the report and HEAM's innovation mission, there is a natural fit in what we do. HEAM already brings together trusts, local authorities, innovators, academia and industry as part of many of our programmes, such as PSERV. We look to support culture and behavioural change, which is a predominant focus of our perinatal culture and leadership programme and a key aspect of how we want to support multi-agency learning and sharing of best practice and provide a neutral space for difficult conversations. And developing and looking at the outcome measures to see if OD and cultural change has worked. Much like the national spread of chat health, enabled through HIN support, HIN can accelerate pathways that reduce system pressure, identify models that reduce handover risk, and support digital adoption and improves safety and flow. So I just want to say thank you for joining us today. That's a big thank you to Will, Luke and Sophie, and a big thank you to the two fellows that weren't able to join us today for our podcast. It's been a really important conversation. I want to thank you for a fascinating discussion and insight. The Reimagining Risk Report offers a clear message. Risk isn't just about a clinical issue, it's a whole system opportunity. If you'd like to learn more about how Heme can support your organisation, explore case studies or get involved in our programme, please visit our websites or contact our team. Thank you for listening.